The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Welcome to another off-season check-in here on Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast, right here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann here with Phil Bush. And Phil, how's the summer going?
It's going. It is a cool 96 degrees with 80% humidity here in Milwaukee. So basically,
that sounds like Texas weather almost.
Yeah, it's almost like we're potting together in Dallas.
Almost. I was actually just in Seattle this past week where they just had the kind of weather I just wanted to put in my suitcase and take home. It was like highs of like 70.
Brilliant.
And I mean, basically what you guys maybe would like in the, you know, typically have in the early summer, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we've basically kind of been living that way the last couple of weeks. And like I said, yeah. Satan decided to show up and turn everything red hot.
But yeah. I wish I could just bring that Seattle weather home. But we're not here to talk about the weather. We're here to talk about some Marquette basketball notes. We took some of your questions on Twitter. We're going to get to a few of those here in today's podcast. We may run through a few recruiting notes later in the show, and also maybe some notes on TBT, the basketball tournament, which is taking place at the Al McGuire Center this weekend. It may actually be in progress by the time you listen to this. And hopefully Marquette is still alive, the Golden Eagles alumni, I should say. But Phil, I thought we'd get to some of these questions.
That'd be a good little prep podcast, right, for the TBT?
Hopefully it's not dated by the time everybody listens to it. hopefully Golden Eagles alumni are still alive. But we're going to get to the questions some of you guys sent us. Phil, I'm going to start this one. I'm going to throw this one at you since you are a season ticket holder and you would probably speak better to this one. Nick Kolb, or I don't know if it's Cobb, because there was a quarterback who spelled it that way. It was Cobb. But Nick Kolb on Twitter asked, traditions that you would like to see Marquette keep or kill in the new building?
Yeah, so I got a couple. I teased one that might be sacrilegious, or like I said on Twitter, 25-year-old me would punch me in the face. I'm gonna come out hot with the first take on this. One of the ones I would kill, where the streets have no name.
Kind of over it.
I'm kind of over it, and like it was cool, and it was. Like, it was sentimental to us because, like, that was kind of the intro when they started it when we were in freshman.
Yeah, basically Crean's first year, if I remember correctly. I mean, they were definitely playing that when we were in college in the early 2000s. I don't know if it necessarily started with Crean's first game, but maybe it did.
Yeah, and I think it's just overplayed. I don't know that it really has any connection to the school. I don't know that it – I mean, everyone seems more hyped for ACDC for the jump ball than they do for where the streets have no name. So that's one I would kill. I would go something, you know, mid 2000s, a little more hip hoppy, get a little more energy going when you kind of get the intros going and everybody fired up. So
I'm not against that one. Depending on what the song is,
right?
You know, something that can. It's got to be a song that everyone can kind of like get hyped up for. Obviously, it can't be a song that only the people, you know, 40 and over are going to enjoy, and also not just a song that only the students are going to like while all the alumni kind of roll their eyes at it. It's going to be one of those songs that everybody can kind of get up for, like Thunderstruck, right? Like, that's just a stadium anthem that everyone gets up for. Again, Streets has had a good run, but again, it's not like U2 is a group of Marquette alumni or anything.
Correct.
It would be sweet if they were, but they're not.
Yeah, so I would kill Streets. Honestly, I mean, the only reason it's interesting at all is simply because they get a old rich donor to get up and humiliate himself by jumping up and down. But I'd kill Jump Around. Like,
gasp.
Come on. Yeah, I know.
That seems like that's a request coming in from Madison.
No, I have not been turned by the enemy. It's simply, everybody does Jump Around. Move on. I don't know. I think somebody mentioned on Twitter the whole sucks when they announce. I mean, it's kind of tried and done, and I'd maybe come up with something else clever to taunt the opponent lineup, maybe.
Yeah, I think the sucks thing could probably go. I wouldn't mind letting that go.
I definitely think they need to keep the, I don't know what we call it, but the pray video. with the hype up where they go through Marquette's history and, you know, and you get all the cheers for Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler and Jay Crowder and the
updated version, but kind of keep that thing. I'm down with that.
Yeah, for sure. I would keep that. I think it's going to be interesting in the new stadium because the students are going to basically be in the end zones from each other. What everyone keeps referring as the bow tie. You know, if you I'd honestly, as a new tradition, I'd do something neat around the concept of a bow tie, like do patterns, like do color patterns, or like have a polka dot bow tie, or, you know, students wearing gold and a few students wearing blue where it makes it look like a polka dot blue bow tie.
Somebody suggested on Twitter, now that students are on opposite ends, I forget who said it, but to start a We Are on one end, Marquette on the other. I mean, I think that's something that's pretty easy, especially if it's led by the cheerleaders. I mean, the cheerleaders can kind of orchestrate that pretty easily, I would think.
Yeah.
I think that's a cheer that could become a thing.
Well, and like a call and response and like doing some sort of motion stuff back and forth. Like, I don't want to say the wave or something, but you know what I mean? Like, you could do different things going back and forth. That would be fun to get folks engaged. You know, I'm trying to think what other game – Name That Tune can stay –
Yeah, I think Anonymous Eagle would fight you if you said get rid of
Well, he has threatened to launch people into the sun, so that's not. I mean, I feel like
well,
I'm
we don't need
there.
That.
Yeah, but we don't need that. But other than that, I mean, I don't know. Like, I can't say that honestly within the game day experience anything totally stands out to me. I mean, I guess to be fair, half the time I'm getting there just at tip because I'm, you know, dragging No Red for Owen up, into the game last minute after I had to go and pick him up and stuff. So maybe I'm missing some of the pregame stuff, but I mean, most of it is, I could take it or leave it. I don't know that there's anything that I hate or.
Yeah.
Or
like, I don't know if there'd be anything that would be necessarily blasphemous to take out of the experience or something that would just totally disrupt it either, if as long as it's something that everybody can kind of get on board with. That's just kind of fun and adds to it. So,
yeah, well, go ahead.
What's that?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I haven't been to a ton of games at the Bradley Center over the last few years, but I always enjoy the game day experience. So I wouldn't change a ton, but if you want to liven it up, make it a little more modern, add a few fun things here or there, open to suggestions.
Well, what I was going to say is, you know, you got the new arena, and I'm sure it's got a state of the art system. I'd be curious to see what new interesting things they can do. Like, I think they did recently. I was kind of surprised they were able to do it in a 30-year-old stadium, but they did where I had seen it before is the hockey games where they kind of use the 3D graphic kind of image.
Yes, now that's cool stuff. Hopefully they have – now if they can get something that extravagant with Marquette with kind of 3D images on the court, yeah, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, so – and they did a little bit of that in the Bradley Center, but I've got to think that they can do it full time with the new court. And the other thing that's going to be interesting is there's going to be a new, I guess, DJ and a new game announcer. Mike Jagabowski is not back, I don't believe. I thought I saw those job openings posted. So that'll be curious.
Did you apply?
What's that?
Did you apply?
No, I did not. Well, please. They just would have had to listen to one and a half of these episodes and gone, nope, no thank you. So it'll be the game day experience, just generally new arena and new announcers and new technology. It's going to be all new. So I kind of embrace that, like Will Smith once said, the new hotness.
I suppose he did say that. Hopefully the answer is that question about traditions to keep and kill in the new building. Let's go move on to the next question, Phil. We'll just start with something that kind of came just from right here over at Crack Sidewalk. Start with Alan Bukowski. He said, is it crazy to think Marquette is the Big East favorite this year?
Why don't you answer that first? Since I answered first the last time, what do you think?
I would say just a little bit. But it's just not, like, to say favorite is where you lose me. To say that they could finish in the top two or three, I think is very reasonable. Marquette's got to make a move up at some point, and it seems like the pieces are in place for them to do that. Now, when Villanova lost four starters to the NBA draft. Everyone's, you know, I know Marquette Twitter kind of got in a mode of like, man, are we the favorites? Could we win the Big East? And you know, it, kind of my take on that is, I don't want to set that as the expectation that Marquette should win the Big East, but that should absolutely be a goal. Like when the team gets together, you know, this summer and in begins in training in the fall, and they're setting team goals for the year, they should absolutely believe that they can win the Big East, as opposed to the last few years where that really would seem like a pipe dream. Could they win it? Yeah, maybe they could. Maybe they have enough experience. Maybe Villanova takes a while to I certainly don't think Villanova is going to be as good as they were. I don't care what kind of recruiting class to bring it in. I know they got a good transfer as well, but I mean, you lose four NBA players, you're going to be worse. And they, to my knowledge, they didn't. I don't know if they added any NBA players. And I know that Quinterly kid is a very good point guard, but I'm not sure he's quite a one and done point guard. We'll see. But either way, they did not add four NBA players. That I promise you.
Well, even still, they didn't add, like, they're going to be awfully young too, right? Like, it's not just a talent issue; it's an experience issue.
And yeah, and as Marquette can attest, experience when you don't have it can be something you really miss. And the experience excuse is gone for Marquette this year. I think they have plenty of experience, and basically as many returning players as anyone in the Big East, perhaps the most. So there are reasons to be optimistic, but yeah, I think saying Marquette is the Big East favorite just goes a bit too far, but then so then the question becomes, well, then who is the Big East favorite? I guess you kind of have to still give it to Villanova. I just don't think it's like a runaway choice like it has been the last year, couple years, even though Xavier did win the Big East regular season last year. But Villanova has been the class of the league since it reformed, and I think just kind of out of respect for what they have done and the coach they have and the depth, and they do have some experienced players coming back. Of course, Pascal's back, Booth is back, and you know, some guys who were just reserves, bench players last year, are now stepping into starting roles. So Villanova will be fine. And if you're asking me who I would pick to the win the league right now, I'd probably say Villanova, but I'm not going to go so far as to say that they are just worlds ahead of Marquette right now, and Marquette could under no circumstances beat them, which is what I would have said each of the last 4 years, to be honest. But I can't say Marquette is the favorite right now.
Well, I guess, again, it's being overly semantical. I don't think Marquette's, like, expected to be the favorite, or that's, like you said, that's the expectation. My expectation is they're definitely a top three team. Anything less than top three is unacceptable in this next season. I think it is. It's definitely possible that they finish number one. Quite frankly, I guess I'm even willing to say it's probable. There's a better than 50% chance that Marquette could be the number one team in the Big East.
Better than 50%, so that you're kind of saying they are the favorite.
I guess I'm talking myself into it. I mean, they have to be, right? Like,
I just can't go that far just because, granted, I know the history shouldn't play that much into it, but, you know, under Wojo, I mean, just call it like it is, they finished tie for ninth, seventh, in a four-way tie for third, and when they got the sixth seed that year, and last year they were tied for sixth and got the seventh seed. So to kind of make that leap from a team that's consistently been in the bottom half of the league to suddenly be the favorite, I mean, it is a big leap, but I see why you could make that leap considering what everyone else in the league has lost. But for me, you know, honestly, Phil, it kind of reminds me, if you think back to 2002-03, Cincinnati had won Conference USA every year since its inception. And going into that year, Cincinnati had lost a bunch of guys. Steve Logan, Donald Little, I'm trying to remember some of the other guys that were seniors in the 2001-02 season. They were gone, and Cincinnati was kind of rebuilding a little bit, but kind of out of respect, everyone still picked Cincinnati to win the league that year. And I remember actually just hearing from Bob Huggins in the preseason, he said, yeah, I mean, hey, you look on paper, no way. I mean, Marquette's really good. And granted, we don't have a Final Four caliber team, I don't think, this year, like we did in 2003, and obviously Marquette ended up winning the league that year. But it reminds me of that in just in the sense that we've had this one program that has dominated the league since it began, and they seem to have lost a lot, and it's a lot to come back from, even if they do have a great coach, they have a great culture, they have a great program, they have plenty of players that they are bringing into the program, and it's just, you would think they're going to fall back a little bit, and someone is going to unseat them. If you're going to pick a team to unseat them, yeah, you're going to look at a team that has experience, that has scores, that has guys who are going to be preseason first team All Big East. I think Marquette has two in Sam and Marcus. So, yeah, there's plenty of reasons you could talk yourself into Marquette being the favorite. I just hesitate to go there right now because, really, Marquette really hasn't finished in the top half of the league in 5 years.
Right. No, I get that. I guess, but it's, I mean, part of the reason I say it's, I guess I've talked myself into the favorites. It's not just that Villanova is going to be, you know, potentially not as good or probably not as good, right? I mean,
I would say it's not insulting to say certainly not as good.
Right.
They were the national champions. I think they only lost like one or two games at full strength last year, right?
Right.
I mean, they lost a few, but there were games when Booth was hurt, and there was DiVincenzo missed a game or two with a concussion. I think they only lost one or two games all year at full strength, and they just lost four guys to the NBA, three first-round picks and a very high second-round pick. So it is not insulting at all to me to say Villanova will not be as good next year, because they won't.
Right, so they're not going to be as good. But part of Marquette advancing and potentially taking the top spot is that the Big East as a whole is going to be down, right? Like, so it's not like Marquette has to beat Villanova twice to claim the top of the Big East. They can beat Villanova once and beat everybody else in the league. And if Villanova trips up with a young team on the road somewhere along the way, then Marquette can be the top
yes.
team in the league, right? So the league overall is going to be down. A lot of talent, experienced talent, has left the league this past season. So, you know, I think it's realistic, and I don't want to call it an expectation, right? Because that's way too high to say you have to finish in the number one spot or you're just not good enough, right?
Right.
But I do think it has to be an expectation that we finish in the top three and likely that we could be a number one team.
Yeah, I would be disappointed if heading into the last four or five games of the season, Marquette is not in the running. The Big East title. Like, if we've got, say, four or five games left and we're saying we have no shot at the Big East title, that would be disappointing to me.
Right, right.
But, you know, like we go into the last four or five games and say, hey, Marquette's a game back, the Marquette's two games back, you know, it could happen. That would be about where I would hope they could be based on what they have coming back and what the rest of the league has. So, is it crazy to call them the favorite? Maybe, in my opinion, but it is certainly not out of It is certainly not crazy for that team, for those players and those coaches to go show up at practice this year and this fall and say, guys, we can win the league this year.
Right. Yep. No, I agree. That's got to be their mindset, right?
Absolutely.
And I think it probably ties into one of the next questions, but that's part of why they scheduled the way they did.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and move on to that next question.
Yeah, so we've got from the official Crack Sidewalks page.
It's basically us talking to ourselves.
Yeah, we're talking to ourselves and asking ourselves questions was, did MUBB overschedule?
My answer to that question is not only no, but hell no.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, if you've got to move forward a little bit, and Marquette expects to be good this year, and it's not like they scheduled Duke, Kentucky, Michigan State, Michigan, Kansas. Well, they may have played Kansas, but they didn't schedule like a bunch of projected top 10 teams. They have a very challenging schedule, and it's time to win some games. And it also counteracts what we were just talking about, that the Big East may be down a little bit, and you may not have quite as many chances for those top-tier wins in the Big East this year. And so you kind of make up for that and try to get some top-tier wins in the non-conference schedule. I think it's the preseason NIT isn't official yet, but Marquette is going to get two out of Kansas, Tennessee, and Louisville. We probably don't need to go through the schedule because I think we did that in the last podcast. But Marquette, yes, has certainly stepped it up from the last few seasons, but it is time to step it up, right? I mean, because it's a more experienced team. You have at least, in my opinion, two All Big East players preseason coming back. I would think Sam Hauser and Marcus Howard would be preseason All Big East players. possibly first team, honestly, with Shamori Ponds, I think, is probably the one lock I would say is first team all Big East. Maybe somebody from Villanova will be, but you're expecting to be a better team, so let's challenge yourself. Let's get some good wins in the non-conference schedule. And granted, if the Big East is going to be down a little bit, you need to make up for it a little bit in your non-conference. So I don't think Marquette has scheduled ridiculously. Yes, there will be some very challenging games, especially if they draw Kansas or Tennessee in the preseason NIT. And Kansas State will be challenging, but not a game that I would say is out of the realm of possibility of Marquette winning. So, no, I don't think Marquette is overscheduled. What do you think?
No, I don't think they've overscheduled either. I get the logic of someone who would say they overscheduled, right, saying, well, we got to – you know, if you rack up, even if they're good losses, if you rack up too many losses, you know, going into Big East, you could put yourself behind the eight ball. I get that. But a couple of things. One, again, this is a team we just spent, you know, what, 5 minutes talking about how the very real possibility of expectations being to win the whole Big East. In that case, I don't know that there really is an overschedule, because then at that point we're talking, hey, we want to get seeds, right? We're talking top four seeds in the tournament, and you got to schedule tough for that and win those games preferably. The other thing is I cannot in good consciousness bag on overscheduling after we spent the last 4 years complaining about how they've underscheduled, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's going to be good basketball.
Then they're going to be like, what are we going to do to please you guys?
Well, clearly nothing. They can never please us other than a national championship. But it's a good schedule, right? Like, and it should challenge the team. It should mature the team. And hey, they're going to have to play games like that in the tournament. So there's nothing on the schedule that I say is an impossible win. And there's nothing that looks on the schedule, without going to game by game, there's no like ridiculously tough stretches either. You're playing some good teams, and you got to play good basketball.
Yeah. I would much rather lose at Indiana or lose to Kansas State than beat Chicago State.
Right.
Whether Mark Titus is coaching them or not.
Please get behind that. What's the hashtag for that?
Make Chicago State again.
But
not to drift off to other podcasts, but yeah, I would rather just play a challenging schedule. And if you rack up a loss here or there, I think the committee will respect you for that. And I would just rather go that way and deal with the RPI consequences of losing a tough game, especially if it's a road game like Indiana. Now, granted, Marquette didn't schedule that one. They scheduled Kansas State, so maybe Kansas State is the better example. But, yeah, I would rather lose to Kansas State at home than beat a team that is in the 350 range of the RPI.
Right.
I just don't think that does much for you, and it doesn't impress anybody. So, Marquette, they haven't announced those preseason NIT matchups, but my guess is that Kansas and Tennessee are going to be on opposite sides of the bracket. So you're guaranteed, I think, almost to get a top 10 team in one of those games. You're either going to get Kansas or Tennessee. And then, you know, if you lose that one, you'll get Louisville. But who knows, maybe you pull an upset and then you get a nice matchup with two top 10 teams, which would be awesome. So,
right.
Yeah, I have no qualms with Marquette's schedule. The only thing I would maybe even complain about is if they fill up the rest with cupcakes in that 320 plus range, with there's a few bye games left to fill. But even then, I wouldn't complain too much, because I think the rest of the schedule is pretty solid.
Yeah, well, and that's probably I suspect at this point that we're going to get some of those at least one plus 300 game, which I mean,
yeah, well, I mean, one here or there is fine. It's just when you see like three or four of them, you know, that's when you kind of roll your eyes.
Yeah,
a little bit,
that's right.
Like, I'd get over it. So
yeah,
shall we move on to the next question?
Yes, let's.
All right, Zach asked on Twitter, who is going to have an unanticipated breakout year, kind of like Greg Elliott last year? For me, Phil, that's hard to say because we're not anticipating it.
Right.
So, I mean, I'll put it to you this way, Phil, and you can respond. The guys I am not anticipating having big years, with all respect to them, would be Brendan Bailey, because he's coming back from a Mormon mission. He's only played, I think, he's only had like a day of basketball activity a week for the last 2 years.
Yep.
So I wouldn't expect he's going to get a lot of minutes. Ike Eke, I'm not expecting a lot of minutes from him just because Marquette has a lot of guys in the front court right now, and I think he will be a good player down the road. I just don't anticipate a lot of minutes from him this year. And, yeah, that's about it. I mean, granted, like, you know, Joey Hauser, this is his first year, but I think most people expect some nice things from him here and there. I think a lot of people are expecting a little nice progressions in their second seasons for Elliott and Kane and I'm blanking. Elliott and Kane and I mean, Sakar in his second year. Well, I guess it would be his third year playing because he redshirted a year. So as far as unanticipated breakouts, is there anyone you want to go with?
No, I guess the way I look at it is everyone I'm looking at, I'm expecting things out of, right? I suppose maybe given what we've got, a breakout is like Joey Hauser, right? Simply, he's got high expectations, but he's coming off an injury. He doesn't know, you know, he's at a play, at a position where we've got plenty of talent already. Does he, you know, really step up and steal minutes that we wouldn't otherwise have expected? Or maybe somebody like Ed Morrow or something. Like, that's the only way.
But yeah, like, I think Ed Morrow, I'm excited for him, but I think some of us on Twitter have maybe overhyping Ed Morrow a little bit. Like, he's just going to be just a rebounding and defensive demon, like, and like one of the best players in the country. I think he's going to be good, but like, I wouldn't say if he had a great season that it would be unanticipated. I think a lot of people are anticipating a great season from Ed Morrow.
Well, I mean, we're talking about the team maybe being expected to be number one. You have to expect your players to play well to get that level of expectation.
Yeah,
right?
I guess I just don't have an answer for an unanticipated breakout year because I just don't know how many guys who aren't expected to do much would even have the opportunity to do so. I mean, heaven forbid there are injuries that force guys like Bailey and Eke into more action. But as things go right now, I'm expecting a lot big things from every guy who's returning, and Joey Hauser and Ed Morrow in their first seasons for Marquette. So, yeah, I guess I just don't have a great answer there.
Well, let's maybe ask the question a different way, and maybe it's, again, given that the high expectations we're expecting players to have a really good year, what player would you be most concerned about, like, either taking a step back or not being able to step up the way? Like, would you – I guess maybe a way of saying it is, you know, what player poses the most risk to the success of the team if they don't step up?
I would say Chartouni at point guard. I mean, if he does not turn out to be a reliable distributor and a good defender, I think that would be a bummer. I mean, I think that could cause the season to go the opposite way, because I think you're anticipating him really filling some real quality point guard minutes so Marcus Howard can still play off the ball and get those open looks that just make him so dangerous. And you're also, I think people are expecting Chartouni to add a lot defensively. And if he doesn't, I think that would put the team at a lot of risk from, you know, not living up to expectations this year. So I guess, does that answer your question? That could be a big swing player one way or the other. Like, 'cause if he's great, then I think Marquette's going to be great. But if he struggles or doesn't fit in, then that could be a problem.
Well, yeah, I think that answers the question. I would say Chartouni is probably the number one. The number two would be the previously mentioned Ed Morrow, because we are in both cases, and it'll come, and it may actually, we're doing a lot of pre-segueing, but it may answer one of the last question we have coming up, but or it's part of that answer anyway. Is, you know, we're counting on Chartouni and Morrow to help with the defensive end, right? Significantly, right? For a team, no matter how down the Big East is next year, a 100 plus ranking for your defense is not going to get you number one in the conference, right? So that
I would be surprised, yes.
Right. So this team has to be better defensively. Chartouni and Morrow are the players that have to provide that. So I would say if those guys don't step up like we expect them to, those are the two players, you know, regardless of any of the players that were at risk, if those two don't step up or meet expectations, that puts the overall performance at the most risk.
Although a 100-ish defense could win you the Pac-12.
Well, yeah, but who wants to watch Pac-12 after dark?
Arizona. I was just looking at Arizona last year was 83rd overall defensively at the end of the year. So, but yes, I would agree, Phil, that a 100-ish defense, I would be surprised if that's good enough to win you the Big East. Even if the Big East does take a step back from what it's been the past couple years, I would still be surprised if it's not a top four RPI league in the country. So there'll be plenty of talent. Wins will be tough to come by, but maybe not as tough as they have been the last two or three years. But we shall see. But Phil, you alluded to it a minute ago. Shall we move on to our last question from our adoring public?
Yes, let's do that.
So Ben Snyder over at Anonymous Eagle, he asked us to evaluate his grand project of ranking the Marquette defense, rating Marquette's players. First of all, I think Ben did a great job with this thing. He for those of you who missed it, first of all, where were you?
What are you doing?
He basically asked Anonymous Eagle readers to go on the site and rate all of Marquette's players by certain defensive metrics or certain characteristics that you would apply to defense, specifically length, strength, vertical leap, trying to scroll down here to get the rest of them, lateral quickness, intelligence, hustle, and yeah, that was it. And I'm not going to like read all the stats here because obviously that would take a long time, but what were some of your takeaways, Phil? Ben did a great job just putting it together, a big spreadsheet, kind of breaking down everyone's votes. A lot of the things that you would maybe anticipate would be low, like, say, Howard and Rousey's length, very low. Something like Jamal Cain's vertical, very high. Theo John's strength, very high. I guess the whole project was to answer the question, is Marquette's defensive troubles based on scheme? So were they good defensive players and they're struggling in scheme? Or is it based on talent and that the issue is the not very talented defensive players, and maybe the scheme is fine. Phil, with all things, just as in all things in life, I think the answer is somewhere in the middle. But we'll kind of get to that as we kind of break this down. What did you think of Ben's little defensive project?
Well, first of all, I thought it was a really clever idea to basically crowdsource a statistical analysis of the defensive attributes of the team. So I thought that was great. And maybe this is a sociology experiment in groupthink, but I think the stats were pretty spot on in terms of how I would have personally and how I did, you know, kind of vote in the poll around the various players. I think, you know, and I guess I'll bring it back to another article that Anonymous Eagle also published recently. Taking in a nutshell, like taking some key defensive metrics over the last 4 years for the team and kind of grouping them based on like, these are the three attributes we need to be high, should be as high as possible, and these other attributes need to be as low as possible to just kind of do a rough check. And basically with all this analysis, what it really comes down to for me is that perimeter defense has sucked and the interior defense hasn't been much better. I think it's a talent problem so far. I haven't seen enough based on everything I saw. I didn't see enough to say it's more scheme than talent. I think it's really defensive talent that's been holding us back. To a large extent, I guess, is the conclusion I would make.
Yeah, I would say I still think it's a mix of a little bit of both. I think one thing that I think a lot of people have talked about as far as Marquette's scheme is they do hedge a lot. It seems like the big man, especially like Held, was often left kind of one-on-one with really athletic guards. I think that happened a lot in the St. John's game that Marquette lost last year. But again, maybe some of the things that you do there are forced by the talent that's on the floor, that maybe you have smaller guards who can't fight through screens, right? So that forces the big man to switch, and then he gets left out there one-on-one. So, but you know, I can't just absolve the coaching entirely, because I do think sometimes they get lost out there. I think there was definitely one game this year where you could hear Sam Hauser on television say, "What the F are we doing?"
Yeah. Yep.
Like they got down the floor. It's like you said, "What the F are we doing?" So that just kind of explains, like, even if you want to blame that on the players, well, who's coaching the players? I mean, they work on that in practice during the week. So I do think some of it has to be on the coaching. But, yeah, I don't think Marquette is best situated at every position to be a great defensive team, particularly the last 2 years when you're playing Rousey and Howard together. I get why you did it, because they were just so explosive offensively. And we've beaten this to death a lot, so I don't want to get into that too much. But, yeah, I would say the talent certainly has been a problem defensively. Can Chartouni and Morrow fix everything? Probably not, but hopefully they make a big enough difference to swing that at least a little bit, you know, in a positive direction.
Yeah, well, I think it's one of those. I mean, if you think about it, everybody raves about the defense during the Buzz Williams era, which is fair. I mean, it was very good, but what was his philosophy? Length and athletes, right? Like, offensively, they weren't great because they just weren't good shooters, and they, you know, they weren't great, you know, offensive players, but they had length and they were athletic. I would say the previous two seasons, I don't think that we've had an overabundance of length or athleticism, and I think it's hard to game plan around that. So I guess the one thing I would say is, I know conclusively that we did not have the right players for the defense. What I don't know conclusively yet is whether the coach, when he does have the players, can play defense, right? I mean,
that's kind of the million-dollar question for this year, right?
Yep.
Is once Marquette has what we believe to be some good defensive players in position, can they put together a good defense? Because, you know, again, for those of you who didn't participate in Ben's poll, like, basically you rated everything on 1 to 10, and so at the end you got an average on these stats. So I guess what, maybe a 6.5 or better, you're rated as a good defender, let's say?
Yep.
Or, like, maybe 8 or better, you're a great defender.
Yep.
So guys that rated a 6.5 or better would be Sam Hauser. Sakar was the highest rated player at 7.1. Greg Elliott, almost a 7. He's at a 6.9. Nice. Theo John, a 6.6. And Jamal Kane, a 6.8. So you have a few guys rated decently there. Ben estimates Morrow and Chartouni at about 7s. So basically he's rating it, pretty much both of them would be as two of the, he would rate those two as the two of the three best players on next year's team defensively. And he rates Joey a 6.4, for what it's worth.
So I don't know.
And then
how
you're
we
losing the guy who got the lowest
ratings
by far, Andrew Rousey, who averaged out to a 3.7.
Right. Well, and
again,
and
none
know.
Of that is really all that scientific. It's kind of crowdsourcing, but it is interesting. I guess there is some science to it, but it's not like it's basketball scouts and coaches doing that evaluation. But it is interesting to me, and I think everyone can agree that we are losing Marquette's worst defender, adding a guy who we hope is a good defender in that same position, and adding a pretty good defensive player, we hope, in the front court as well. And you just got to hope that pushes the numbers up and, you know, hopefully close to, if not above, that 100 mark.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to, is that we just we've transformed the roster, and we've put a lot of hope into somebody like Chartouni to improve our perimeter defense. I don't know. Again, maybe I'm being overly optimistic or just not aware enough, but I feel like Chartouni could by himself raise the defense, you know, a couple of dozen basis points, just simply because, you know, his length and defensive ability stops the defense from having to work so hard and you know, kind of come from behind all the time like they were with the Rousey and Howard having to play playing on the perimeter all the time, you know.
Yeah. So hopefully that answers your question, Ben. Again, we enjoyed the project. I think it's interesting. You can find it on Anonymous Eagle. Just do a search for a recap of the title of the article is a recap of the great defensive scouting project. So basically just search Anonymous Eagle for great defense recap Marquette. You'll find it. Very interesting. There's a spreadsheet. You can go comb through it all. Ben did a great job. So I enjoyed it. Very good. So I think that wraps up the questions for the show. Again, thank you guys for doing that. Maybe we'll do it again by the end of the summer as we kind of get ready for the season. Phil, before we kind of wrap things up, kind of touch on a couple more things. I want to kind of update on recruiting. Marquette has definitely started to reach out to more 2020 and 2021 prospects. Man, that makes me feel old that 2020 is really, kids are really that close away.
Yeah.
I kind of want to really just kind of limit the notes to 2019 for now, just because those are most prominent on our mind. Marquette has two spots to fill. Really, most of the news is not great. I wouldn't say it's, like, terrible because, you know, it's recruiting. Who knows? But on the negative side, Jalen Wilson, who is a swingman from down here in the Dallas area, he had Marquette in his top six, but he committed to Michigan, so he's off the board. Although there was a time there, it looked like he may be coming back in when it looked like John Beilein was going to the Pistons, but that didn't happen. So Jalen is solid to Michigan, and he is recruiting others, including DJ Carton, who also has Marquette in his top six. That's the good news. Bad news, Marquette is the only one in the top six who is not getting an official visit. So that's not exactly a good sign.
Right.
Not say that it's over, but not a great sign. Rocket Watts is a guy I had been optimistic about with Marquette just because of that Detroit connection. Wojo seemingly has a pipeline to Detroit prep basketball, but Mark is his real first name, but everybody calls him Rocket. He made the USA U18 team that competed in Canada this summer, won a gold medal. So I think his stock is really shooting up. I'm guessing it might come down to Michigan and Michigan State for him. So I'm not saying he's out of the mix for Marquette, but I'm saying his stock is rising and more teams are going to be taking notice. Maybe even Bill Self, who coached him in that tournament. So keep an eye on that one. And one more guy I guess a couple more I'll throw at you. Samuel Williamson, who is a guard forward from Rockwall, Texas. He was at Marquette on an unofficial visit. He said he's going to cut down his list after Peach Jam, which is at the end of July. So maybe that's a name to keep an eye on. He's a guy I've actually seen in person a couple times, Phil. Really long guy. Like, he's really skinny, but he's got really good length and is a really good shooter. He's a guy I would actually be really excited if he committed to Marquette. I think he's probably underrated in his class because he is kind of skinny. But he can really shoot it. So if he puts Marquette like in his final five or something, that would be something to watch. Seth Lundy is a wing player from Philly. He took an unofficial visit to Marquette. And the last guy I'll just mention is Nico Mannion, who is a guy. He's a 2020 prospect, but he said on Twitter on Friday, actually, I will have a, quote, big announcement coming up at the end of July. I'm guessing that big announcement is that he's going to reclassify to 2019, maybe even cut his list. Marquette is in his top 10 for now, but as are schools like Duke and Villanova, Kansas, Arizona, a lot of really good programs. So he may be a little out of Marquette's league, but I know Marquette's really on him. I know Stan Johnson is kind of working that Arizona pipeline he has. So maybe Marquette can get an unofficial visit from Nico, but we'll see there. So that's kind of your recruiting update for now, Phil. Any thoughts?
No, I mean, you got to think Marquette's going to make some moves here in the late summer, fall time frame to get at least one or two higher caliber players in.
I think, basically, you know? The general takeaway from what all the notes I just made, Marquette, as far as being really close on a top 50 guy, Marquette is really not right now from what I can tell. But there's still plenty of irons in the fire, and there's still a long way to go. So don't get too up or too down about recruiting.
Right, we'll just, yeah.
Something to keep an eye on.
Well,
by the way,
go ahead.
I was going to say one other note. Noble Days, who's a guy I'm sure many of you are familiar with because he's from Racine, Wisconsin. He tweeted out he's coming up – he's releasing a, quote, top five or four very soon. And I just took that away wondering, there's a fifth school that really needs to step it up or it's going to be four. And I just couldn't help but wonder if that fifth school's Marquette. If that's like the last one in the list he's narrowing down. But again, he's mostly tied to Wisconsin. I don't know how close Marquette is on Noble Days. But anyway, what were you going to say, Phil?
Well, I was just going to say that like there's still time. And the 2019 class is probably not as – like we shouldn't have to get – 2, 3, 4, you know, top 100 players, you know, to really fill out that class. We're looking more like they can be a little pickier, right? Which is why you're not.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe the fact that Marquette projects to return almost everyone next year, maybe shying, you know, having some of these top 50 guys who probably all think they're one and done away from Marquette because they just don't see playing time right now.
Right. Exactly.
So I think Wojo and Stan, well, of course you want to get the best guys you possibly can. Like, I'm sure they'd love to get a five-star guy like Nico Mannion, but they definitely probably would ideally like a kid who would embrace the idea of coming off the bench, maybe even be open to the idea of redshirting as a freshman and then contributing after that. Because, again, if Marquette returns everyone that is projected to return – there's not going to be a whole lot of playing time available for freshmen unless you are world-class, one-and-done type player.
Right.
Just facts.
Yeah, exactly. So it's Marquette's just being a little pickier, so there's no room to no reason to panic at this point. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's all good. It's just keep an eye. I'd just like to make recruiting updates because it's, you know, kind of my job. It's the final recruiting, so.
It's a thing you do. Just kinda,
yeah. Yeah, I'm going to be at a football camp all weekend, by the way, so looking forward to that. Thankfully, it'll be inside, hopefully half of it, because it'll be at the Star and with the Dallas Cowboys practice. But still, going to be a little swampy out there.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah. Anyway, I get off topic. Hey, one more thing to wrap up with. TBT, that's this weekend.
He's excited.
Basketball tournament. Golden Eagles alumni is back again. A few new faces, including some players who are not necessarily – they are not Marquette alums, but they are joining the team just to kind of fill it out a little bit, including some guys I guess Stan Johnson knows kind of helped fill out the roster a little bit because I guess some guys who have been on the team in the past either, like say in Dwight Bikes' case, have NBA contracts, so they're not going to do it, or just have other obligations as they're trying to make NBA teams or dealing with injuries, stuff like that. But if, I'll tell you the thing I'm most looking forward to, Phil, is Travis Diener is going to play on this team.
Yeah, I'm excited for like just the I'm excited for the atmosphere. I'm curious to see how much a quote unquote home court advantage gives to a team. You know, it's hard to say how much more or less talented the other alumni teams are than the Marquette alumni team. But I think playing in the Al is gonna be real fun with what should predominantly be a pro Marquette crowd.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with what we're talking about, by the way, I mean, where have you been the last few years? This is it just kind of started as a small thing, just a basketball tournament with a cash prize at the end that was open to literally anyone who wanted to form a team and play and get enough fans to vote them in. And it's kind of become a thing where a lot of schools put together alumni teams. Now, they're not all alumni teams. Some of them are just guys who are friends who either know each other from high school or AAU or playing overseas, and they form teams. And, like, Overseas Elite is a bunch of guys who have, as it sounds, played overseas, know each other, and they form a really good team, and they've won it, I think, like, three of the four times it's been in existence. But a lot of it is alumni teams, and the Big East has made a deal to have – four Big East teams, form alumni teams, and they all automatically got in. Marquette, Georgetown, St. John's, and Seton Hall all have teams in this thing. So Marquette got to host because their crowd support has been very good. Because the first couple years Marquette was in it, they had games like in the Chicago area.
Yep.
And a lot of Marquette fans came out. So the organizers of the basketball tournament took notice. And so Marquette kind of earned – Marquette fans who showed up, kudos to you guys because you basically earned Marquette a – automatic bid in this thing because they knew Marquette fans would show up to this thing. So for those of you who haven't followed it, some familiar names for Marquette who are involved in this thing. Maurice Acker, guy you should know. Trent Blackledge, Travis Diener I mentioned, Jarrell McNeil, Marquette's all-time leading scorer, of course. Derek Wilson, Jake Thomas, and Jameel Wilson, Darius Johnson-Odom was on the team, but I think he had to pull out. I'm not sure if it's an injury or if he's just got some other pro obligations to deal with. Joe Chapman is a coach on the team. Actually, Joe runs his own basketball academy now, like skills academy there in the Milwaukee area. So Joe's coaching the team this year, so that's pretty cool. And yeah, actually, this is just kind of a fun thing to watch in the summer, with just to get a little Marquette fix, see some guys you've been a big fan of from over the years. And yeah, hopefully Marquette can win a couple games and advance out of this thing, because there's a $2 million cash prize at the end, if you don't know, and the players split that money along with fans of the team. You can, I guess, I don't know if you can still sign up and get in on the money, but if you can, go to the TBT, go to the tournament.com, and you could still, I guess, maybe get in on the money if Marquette ends up winning the thing. So just a fun event, and yeah, just something to tune in. I think it's on ESPN3 this weekend.
Yeah, I think you can stream all the games, and so if you get sick of some of the World Cup, you can start streaming your streaming TBT and cheer for Marquette. I'm excited. It's definitely pretty guard heavy for Marquette, but I am excited to see Travis play again and Jarrell. Like I'd love to see Jarrell at full intensity on the defensive end and just bring back deflections.
Yeah. Yeah, Jarrell, man, you know, that's just one of those guys who I always just hoped he would get more chances in the NBA. I've always thought he's a good player. He had a great, you know, career in the G League, got close a few times, but he's making pretty good money overseas now, so it's not like, you know, poor Jarrell or anything like that. He's doing just fine, but Jarrell's just, I love watching him play because he had such a exciting career at Marquette. Again, he's, you know, the school's all-time leading scorer, and I do enjoy seeing him play in the Marquette colors again. And the uniforms look pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, they do. Like I said, it's going to be good. It's going to be exciting. I'm very much looking forward to it.
And you're going to be able to take yourself away from the World Cup to watch a little bit?
I wish. Well, I'm going to have to watch it, stream it. I'm going to be at a campground north of Madison for the next 4 days. So I'll be watching online like everyone else.
Yeah, I'll be doing the same. I might try to catch a break during this football camp I'm going to be at. Try to watch it a little bit. Might have to watch it on my phone, but I'll definitely check it out. And again, hopefully they can win a couple games, and then I can get to watch it even more next weekend. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I guess that's going to be a wrap it up for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. As always, we appreciate you guys tuning in. You can always hit us up on Twitter. You can ask us more questions. We'll maybe use it next time. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. You can hit up the team handle at Crack Sidewalks. There is a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. Be sure to rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate those 5 stars and the very kind comments. That's always good. And, yeah, be sure to subscribe so you make sure you catch our next one. Phil, any final thoughts before you get out of here?
No, just enjoy the rest of the summer. Enjoy TBT. And glad you guys could join us for an off-season pod.
And remember, don't freak out about recruiting, guys. It's all going to be just fine. Till next time, seashells and balloons, everybody.